Hello and welcome to episode 255 of the Daily Brainwave. My name is Sean and I will be your host as we try and discover the most useful and interesting fact known to mankind. Find us online at dailybrainwave.com and contact the show via email at Sean, that's S-E-A-N, at dailybrainwave.com. We have a listener theme week coming up soon, so send in any topic you want to the Sean at dailybrainwave.com email address for a chance to be included on the show. I'm already getting some responses, so hurry and submit if you want to make sure you get into this upcoming theme week. Today we finish off our look at Joan of Arc by taking a look at that good old propaganda. I always find it fascinating how time treats historical figures. And Joan of Arc, a character who has been ingrained in the European cultural DNA, is certainly no exception to different interpretations and uses through the waves and ebbs of different cultural epochs. To the Catholics, she is a saint, canonized in the early 1900s. To George Bernard Shaw, who wrote a play about her in the 1920s, she was a prodigy, someone who heard the saints guiding her in the same way a great chef can taste a meal without cooking it, or a great musician can hear a song without writing it. Shakespeare portrayed her as little more than a witch, blaming her for England's eventual defeat by the French in his play Henry VI. She was an operatic hero for Verdi, but perhaps her most dramatic performance in the last century was her appearance on both sides of the conflict during World War II. Poor France, man, they just don't get a break. World War II again saw the nation divided, with parts of the country siding with the Axis, known as the Vichy Friends, and a scrappy bunch who made up the Résistance, who worked with the Allies to secure an eventual victory. Both sides liberally invoked Joan of Arc to their cause. On one hand, we have the Vichy French, Nazi sympathizers who portrayed Joan of Arc as anti-Semitic. Now let's be clear, this was a myth constructed by the Vichyists way back in the late 1800s, because at the time, in the late 1800s, racial tensions in France were reaching a boiling point. France was undergoing internal turmoil and social change, and rather than just trying to work out its differences like civilized, decent human beings, the French just did what most of Europe did for about 1,000 years and blamed everything on the Jews. As part of this, the extreme right wing in France, that would later ally itself with Hitler, managed to appropriate Joan of Arc and her Catholicism as a way to say that she was anti-Semitic. Now, whether she was actually anti-Semitic, I honestly have no idea, nor does it really enter into our story. I will say that Joan was pretty goal-oriented, so I doubt she spent a lot of time thinking about Jews in between the battles and the getting kings crowned and all that. What is sure is that the Vichy also used the whole tableau of Joan fighting against a British invasion as part of their propaganda. After all, the British were on the wrong side of the conflict, according to Vichy, fighting against the French, and who knows if they would be content with leaving France alone once they had dealt with the Germans. The problem with the Vichy image of Joan, though, besides the whole hating of the Jews, is the fact that Joan in real life was a strong, independent woman, and the ultra-conservative Vichy had one role in mind for women under their domain, humble housewife. The paradox is instantly apparent. I would have liked to see Joan's reaction to a man who tried to corral her into a Joan Cleaver role. There was also the problem of the Nazi influence on the Vichy. The hypocrisy of claiming that the British might try to reinvade France or something like that, while turning a blind eye to the German agenda for control over pretty much all of Europe, is quite astounding. Perhaps that's why Joan of Arc also showed up in the propaganda for the Résistance. The romantic comparisons here are obvious. France, fighting for her life against outside invaders, her true leaders deposed, off to the side, waiting for a savior to emerge and lead them back to glory. The crownless again shall be king. Charles de Gaulle, the leader of the French resistance, was more than happy to put Joan to work for his side. Indeed, Joan's very homeland of Lorraine was once again in the hand of foreigners. The Germans had taken France. Arise, Frenchmen, and fight! The key to his strategy, since France was, for all practical purposes, under German control, was to incite the layman, the everyday French men and women who still lived in the country, to action and to join the resistance through radio broadcasts sent from his headquarters. To do this, de Gaulle and his administration painted an image of an independent France, free from German or British or American or otherwise outside influence. His France was French through and through. What better symbol to use than that of Joan of Arc, whose fierce patriotism led her from a humble village to the court of the French king? As part of this, de Gaulle flat out lied to the French people during his regular radio broadcasts. When there was a major victory brought on by the Allied armed forces of the British, French, Americans, Australians, and a host of other countries, the Allies carefully crafted announcements with de Gaulle for his transmissions that always made the French part in the victory the most important. Yes, they were allies, but they were also no fools. For his propaganda to work, the French had to feel a patriotic superiority and a call, perhaps from Joan herself. Of course, Joan wasn't a perfect fit for the resistance either. Fueled by the passion for secularism that had been ignited following the French Revolution, de Gaulle's administration was careful to separate church and state. This, of course, would have incensed Joan, who felt that only through the guidance of God could France regain its place on the global scene. And there we have it. Two sides of the same conflict with very, very different ideologies, using the exact same historical figure, and having some legitimate claim to proper use, while both needing to carefully and selectively ignore aspects of her legacy that they just found troublesome. Makes me wonder how history is going to treat Han Solo in 600 years. Thanks for tuning into episode 255 of the Daily Brainwave. Email the show with comments and suggestions, and most importantly, your topics for the upcoming listener theme week at Sean, that's S-E-A-N, at dailybrainwave.com. Check out our website, dailybrainwave.com, where you can find sources and links for further reading about today's topic. And with that, we wrap up our Joan of Arc theme week. You know, the curse of this show is that sometimes you hit on a topic so big that you can only scratch the surface in the 5 episodes in a particular week. And Joan of Arc is just one of those fascinating personalities that I wish I had more time to talk about. I feel like I, you know, did almost no service to her in these 5 episodes. But you know, we don't have more time, and so we say goodbye to Joan and say hello to India. That's where we're headed on Monday. So make sure you tune in next week as we start What Happened Week 2, Electric Boogaloo, right here on the Daily Brainwave. That joke is never, ever going to get old.